Imagine finding out today that the enterprise AI architecture your engineering team just spent the last 2 years painstakingly building has, well, quietly been marked for death by Google.
Yeah, I mean, you wake up, check the news, and realize your entire upgrade path just vanished. It is a terrifying scenario for any CTO.
It really is. And, you know, that is exactly what happened last week. Barely making a blip in the mainstream tech press.
Right, which is wild.
Totally. So welcome to this deep dive, everyone. Our mission today is to, well, decode this silent but massive tectonic shift in the artificial intelligence industry.
And we have some really fascinating source material for this.
Yes, we do. We're working from a newly drafted course chapter from the Koenig AI Academy, and this is dated April 30th, 2026. The subject is Google's Gemini Enterprise Agent Platform.
Right, which we'll just refer to as GA for short.
Exactly, GEP. Yeah. And this platform just reached general availability a week prior on April 23rd.
You know, the timing of this is just crucial to understand. The entire tech world has been pretty much entirely distracted by flashy individual AI models lately.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone is arguing over which model scores, like a few percentage points higher on some completely arbitrary benchmark test.
Exactly. But meanwhile, Google was executing a completely different strategy in the background.
Yeah, they quietly consolidated virtually every AI capability they've shipped over the last 4 years into a single massive platform.
Which is a huge move.
It is. And our goal today is to figure out, you know, is this the ultimate shortcut for enterprise AI? Or is it just an incredibly elaborate vendor lock-in trap?
A very expensive trap, potentially.
Right. So we are going to parse this Koenig AI Academy chapter so you don't have to spend your weekend untangling dense architectural diagrams.
Let's start with what the source actually calls the buried lead.
Yeah, Google is basically admitting their previous fragmented strategy failed, aren't they?
I mean, they obviously wouldn't use the word failed, but from an engineering perspective, they are absolutely hitting the reset button.
Wow.
Yeah, the source notes that GWIP isn't totally new. It actually absorbs and entirely replaces Vertex AI Agent Builder.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It absorbs Model Garden as a subsurface. It even absorbs Dialogflow CX.
There's a lot of consolidation.
It really is. But the most critical point, and, you know, the one the industry completely missed, is Google's strategic declaration.
Right, the roadmap thing.
Exactly. All future Vertex AI roadmap evolutions will be delivered exclusively through GWIP.
So wait, if you were a developer using standalone Vertex services right now,
yeah,
you are effectively stranded, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Standalone Vertex services are getting zero new features. Everything routes through GWIP now.
That is huge. So why are they doing this?
Well, Google is making a platform-defining bet here. They are betting that agent orchestration is the definitive abstraction layer for the next era of enterprise AI.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning the era of a developer just, you know, writing a script to make a simple individual API call to a language model. That's over.
Right, right.
They believe the future is about orchestrating multiple autonomous agents that actually talk to each other to solve complex business problems.
Okay, right now, you're probably listening to this and thinking, well, I don't need this. My current tech stack is fine.
And you might be right.
You might be. But let's look at why legacy tech might be about to break. To visualize what Google is doing, think about how the AI industry has operated up to this point.
It's been very piecemeal.
Exactly. It's like Google used to sell you individual car parts.
Yeah.
Like an engine block here, a steering wheel there, so you could just tinker in your garage and build your own custom vehicle.
Right. That hacker mindset.
Yeah. But now, they are forcing you to buy the entire assembly line. It's an all-inclusive resort. You can't just order a la carte anymore. Mm. You have to check in, use their towels, and eat at their buffet.
I love that analogy. And, you know, understanding how that resort operates under the hood is the only way you can really decide whether it's worth the price of admission.
Definitely.
The Koenig Academy chapter breaks the platform down conceptually, but let's look at the actual mechanics. Like, how does a developer actually go from an idea to a live product in this new ecosystem?
Yeah, so if you are forced into this resort, what are you actually doing on day one? The source details two different entry points for creation, which depends on your technical expertise.
Right, the build pillar.
Yes, the build pillar. So for non-engineers, there is Agent Studio. This is a low-code visual interface. You just drag and drop components, select tools from a menu, and type out an instruction prompt.
And all of this happens while staying within the safety guardrails set by your engineering team.
Right. But if you are the engineering team, you use the ADK, which is the Agent Development Kit.
This is the code-first environment.
Exactly. It supports Python and TypeScript.
Yeah.
And the source mentions the ADK is actually open source under an Apache 2.0 license. But wait, I have to ask, what does open source even mean here if the underlying infrastructure is locked to Google?
That is a really sharp distinction to make. It's tricky. The interface, like the actual syntax you use to treat agents as programmable objects and tools as functions, that part is open.
Okay.
You can write the code locally on your laptop, but to actually execute the heavy lifting of the platform, you have to route it through Google's proprietary backend.
So it's like an open door to a locked building.
That is exactly it. Open door, locked building.
Got it. Now, assuming I'm in the ADK, I really don't want to build every single agent from absolute scratch.
No, nobody has time for that.
Right. So the course chapter highlights Agent Garden, which acts as this repository of pre-built templates for really complex enterprise tasks.
Things like code modernization, invoice processing, or running deep financial analysis.
Yeah, they give you a massive head start. But there's another creation feature that really stood out to me, workspaces.
Oh, yeah, workspaces are huge.
The course describes this as Jeep's answer to code interpreter.
Mechanistically, workspaces are vital. I mean, think about it. If you have an AI agent that is generating and executing bash commands or, managing local files, it needs compute to do that.
Right, it needs processing power.
Exactly. But you absolutely cannot have an LLM executing unverified code directly on your company's core servers. That is a massive security risk.
That would be a disaster.
Right. So workspaces provide these heavily isolated, ephemeral environments where agents can execute code safely. It's basically a functional quarantine zone.
A quarantine zone. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving to the scale pillar. Say you've built 50 of these specialized agents using the ADK. Now you have a new nightmare, right? Latency and volume.
Oh, absolutely.
If 50 bots are trying to wake up at once when 1,000 users log in, your system is just going to freeze. How does this architecture handle the sheer scale?
Well, it relies on the agent runtime, which is their managed execution environment. And the major technical achievement Google is touting here is sub-second cold starts.
Okay, let's clarify that jargon for a second for everyone. A cold start in cloud computing is the delay that happens when an application has to spin up compute resources from zero, just because it hasn't been used in a while.
Exactly. And normally, a cold start for a complex AI application can take several seconds.
Which in a chat interface feels like a complete eternity to the user.
It really does. So, achieving sub-second cold starts means the agent wakes up and provisions almost instantly.
Wow.
And crucially, developers don't have to rewrite their ADK code to deploy it to this runtime. They just point to a configuration file.
Oh, that is so much easier. But you know, the real bottleneck at scale isn't just compute, is it? It's context, it's memory.
Yes. Memory is the hardest part.
The source material highlights a massive architectural leap in how Jeep handles state. It basically divides memory into two buckets, agent sessions and the memory bank.
This is a huge shift.
Let me make sure I'm visualizing this correctly. So a session holds the raw, immediate state of the conversation tied to like a database row or a CRM contact.
Right.
It's basically like the current phone call you're having with the AI.
Yes, that is the immediate short-term context window.
But the memory bank, that's like the AI reading a highly detailed, curated dossier on you before it even picks up the phone.
That is a perfect analogy. And the engineering behind it solves a massive, massive enterprise problem: token costs.
Oh, right.
Because if a user interacts with an agent every day for 3 months, you cannot feed 3 months of raw conversational transcripts into the language model every single time they log in.
No, because you pay per token. That would literally bankrupt the company.
Exactly.
And not to mention the latency of processing that much text would leave the user staring at a loading screen for like 30 seconds.
Precisely. So instead of loading raw transcripts, the memory bank runs an asynchronous background process.
Okay.
It uses a language model to continuously distill the raw conversation history into structured memory profiles.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it extracts the concrete facts, the user's preferences, and the overarching context, and updates a much smaller, structured database record.
So it's basically taking notes on you.
Pretty much. And when the user returns months later, the system retrieves that condensed memory profile. The agent instantly recalls relevant facts without having to process a mountain of old text.
That is incredibly smart. That drastically cuts latency and token overhead.
It really does.
And as you scale, you aren't just scaling individual interactions,
Right.
you are scaling agents that talk to other agents.
Right. Which brings us to orchestration.
Yes, the course notes a vital distinction here. Deterministic routing versus generative routing.
This is really where the paradigm shifts. So deterministic routing means a human developer writes hard-coded logic. Like, if the user asks about billing, hand off to the billing agent.
Which is very predictable.
It is predictable, but it's brittle. Generative routing, on the other hand, means you let a master orchestrator LLM dynamically evaluate the user's prompt in real time. And that LLM actually decides which subagent is best suited for the task.
Okay, wait, stop right there. You have generative routers deciding which of 50 autonomous agents handles a task on the fly.
Yep.
That sounds like an absolute auditing nightmare. I mean, how do you prevent catastrophic errors? If an agent hallucinates and deletes a client's core database, somebody is definitely getting fired.
Oh, absolutely. And this brings us to the operational reality of enterprise AI, which GIAPI addresses with its final two functional areas, govern and optimize.
Let's get into the govern pillar.
So the governance layer is all about preventing that exact chaos, and it starts with agent identity.
Right. The source says every deployed agent gets a unique cryptographic ID. So yeah. It's not just a name tag. It's an unforgeable digital signature.
Precisely. It creates a totally auditable trail. Every single time an agent takes an action, whether it, you know, calls a tool, reads from the memory bank, or hits an external API, that action is cryptographically signed and logged.
Okay, so if something breaks, you never have to guess which subagent went rogue. You have the exact cryptographic receipt.
Exactly. You know exactly who did what.
And to tightly control what those agents can actually do, there is the agent registry.
Right. The register is crucial.
It's a central catalog that prevents redundant tools. Because you really don't want five different development teams writing five slightly different versions of a get customer order function, right?
Oh, that would be a mess.
Yeah. So the registry ensures there is only one approved canonical version of that tool for the entire enterprise. But what about outside attacks? The source mentions an agent gateway featuring something called model armor.
Yeah, so the gateway is the unified traffic layer. All traffic, whether it's external or internal, routes through it.
Okay.
And model armor is Google's defense against prompt injection and data leaks. But the critical mechanism here is that it defends at the network level before the traffic ever hits the model.
So to use an analogy, it's like airport security.
Yeah.
It scans your luggage at the entrance of the airport rather than letting you walk all the way up to the ticketing agent and having the agent themselves pat you down.
That's a great way to picture it.
But why is doing this at the network level so important?
Because language models are inherently probabilistic, right? If you rely on the model itself to detect a prompt injection attack, a really cleverly phrased input can just trick its reasoning.
Right, you can jailbreak it.
Exactly. But network-level filters are deterministic and highly specialized. They scan the incoming prompt for known malicious patterns, and they intercept it before it ever reaches the probabilistic reasoning engine of the agent.
Catching it at the door. I love that.
Me too.
And if something strange does happen, say, like, an internal HR agent suddenly starts pinging random IP addresses in another country,
mm-hmm.
that ties into the agent security dashboard, right?
Right.
And that integrates directly with Google's Security Command Center to actually flag anomalies based on that network traffic.
Exactly. So you basically have the agents locked down, but keeping them secure is only half the battle.
What's the other half?
Making sure they don't become completely useless over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the optimize function. The Koenig chapter points out a really harsh reality of production AI agent quality degrades over time.
Right, because the underlying company APIs change, or, you know, the user base grows and starts asking entirely different types of questions.
Exactly. The system drifts.
So how do you fix it without breaking it further?
Well, before deploying updates, you use agent simulation.
Okay.
This is a staging environment that uses virtualized tools to spit out canned responses. It allows you to test how an agent's generative routing logic handles complex interactions, but without the risk of it accidentally sending real emails or charging real credit cards during testing.
Right. Safely testing in a sandbox.
Yes.
And then once it is live and actually serving real users, you use agent evaluation.
Yes.
The source explains this uses multi-turn autorators, which is essentially an AI grading another AI based on custom rubrics you define. Because if you don't have continuous evaluation, you really only find out your agent is hallucinating by reading angry customer support tickets on social media.
Exactly, which is the worst way to find out. And when an autorator does flag a failure, you use agent observability.
What does that do?
It provides visual tracing of the exact step-by-step reasoning the agent used. You can see the exact tool call that returned a bad parameter, which led to the hallucination. You know the exact why behind the failure.
Which naturally leads directly to the final optimization feature, the agent optimizer.
Yes.
The source says it clusters these observed failures and actually suggests prompt refinements. Wait, if an AI is autonomously rewriting its own core instructions to get a better outcome, what happens to version control?
Yeah, that sounds scary.
If the AI changes its prompt and suddenly violates a compliance law, who is legally liable?
That is the exact enterprise nightmare scenario right there. Skynet, essentially. But the Koenig chapter is very careful to clarify this mechanism to ease those specific compliance fears. The agent optimizer does not apply changes autonomously.
Okay, phew.
Yeah, it acts purely as a suggestion engine. It analyzes the failure logs, finds the patterns, and drafts a better system instruction. But a human developer must manually review, approve, and merge that change into version control.
Oh, okay.
It eliminates the manual grunt work of analyzing logs, but it absolutely does not take the steering wheel.
Okay, that makes so much sense. So looking at this entire architecture, the ability to seamlessly build, scale, govern, and optimize, it really sounds incredibly compelling on paper.
It does.
But, you know, marketing materials always look flawless.
Yeah.
What is GPOG actually hiding? Like, is this platform genuinely right for everyone?
That's the big question. And the course chapter is actually remarkably candid in its contrarian view here.
Really?
Yeah. First, we need to critically examine their claim of being model agnostic.
Right. Because Google loudly advertises that GApe supports over 200 models. It supports open models like Gemma 4, and even competitor models like Anthropic's Claude Opus, Sonnet, and Haiku.
Which sounds amazing.
It sounds like a totally open ecosystem.
It supports them, yes, but it is not truly model agnostic in practice.
How so?
The source explicitly warns that the most powerful differentiating features of the platform, specifically that asynchronous memory bank and the agent optimizer we just discussed, those are heavily biased toward Gemini 3.1 Pro and Flash.
Oh, I see.
If you route all your enterprise traffic through Claude, you are essentially just running Anthropic's model on Google's infrastructure. It will function, but you will lose access to the deep platform-level features that rely on Gemini-specific architectural capabilities.
So it's an open bar, but the top-shelf liquor is strictly reserved for the house brand. And we touched on this earlier, but the infrastructure itself is a massive form of lock-in. You can write your ADK code locally, sure, but the agent gateway, the sub-second runtime, the memory bank processing, all of that relies exclusively on proprietary Google Cloud platform services.
Right. You cannot just lift and shift this architecture to a competitor's cloud.
You are buying into the ecosystem completely.
Totally. And there's an even bigger warning for legacy users. Many companies are naturally going to try to migrate their older systems to this platform.
Right.
But GP is not just a rebranded version of Dialogflow CX.
Right. This requires a massive shift in mental models.
Hmm.
Dialogflow CX was fundamentally deterministic.
Very rigid.
Yeah, you drew a rigid dialogue tree on a whiteboard, and the system followed that flowchart perfectly.
Yeah.
But GNAPE agents use language models to reason probabilistically.
Exactly.
They make independent decisions on the fly based on the context. If you migrate an old deterministic system into GP, expecting an LM to rigidly follow a strict conversational script, you're going to be completely surprised by how it behaves.
You really can't treat an LLM like a flowchart. It will try to solve the user's problem creatively, which is the exact opposite of a rigid script.
So what does this all mean for you listening at home? How do you know if you should actually take on the burden of this massive monolithic platform?
The Koenig AI Academy chapter distills this dilemma brilliantly with what they call the two-pillar rule.
The two-pillar rule.
Yes, and it is easily the most pragmatic piece of advice in the entire document. The conceptual overhead of GEAP is massive. It is heavy, complex enterprise governance applied to artificial intelligence.
Right. So if you are a solo developer or, you know, you're just building a weekend project, GApe is absolute overkill.
Totally.
You do not need a cryptographic agent registry and multi-turn autorators to build a simple chatbot. You can literally solve your problem with a single API call and a Postgres database.
Exactly. Keep it simple. The two-pillar rule dictates that to justify using GEAP, you must realistically need at least two of the four functional areas in production.
Let's play that out for a second. If you are building multiple agents for, say, a healthcare company,
yeah,
and you have incredibly strict legal compliance needs,
right,
you need to seamlessly build, but you also heavily rely on the network-level interception of govern. In that scenario, GEAP makes perfect sense.
It's perfect for that.
But if you only need to build a basic agent, you are paying what the industry calls a massive complexity tax. You are carrying the heavy engineering weight of scale, govern, and optimize without actually extracting any real value from them.
Spot on. The platform is actively built for enterprise scale. If your workload isn't there yet, the platform's rigid governance structures will just actively slow down your development velocity.
All right, let's bring this all together. Google's Gemini Enterprise Agent platform is officially here. It is a highly opinionated, tightly integrated architecture built to absolutely dominate enterprise-scale agent orchestration.
It really forces a new paradigm of consolidated agent-first development, and it officially marks the death of standalone Vertex AI services.
It is the ultimate all-inclusive resort. It's incredibly powerful, and it solves massive scaling issues. But you have to play by their rules, and your workload has to be complex enough to make that steep ticket price worth it.
Very true.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We really hope unpacking these mechanics save you hours of parsing through dense technical documentation.
But before we leave you, there is one final lingering idea I want you to chew on.
Oh, what is that?
Think back to the mechanics of the memory bank we discussed earlier.
You mean the asynchronous background process that continuously distills your raw conversations into structured memory profiles?
Yes. Think about a system specifically designed to persist indefinitely across sessions. It's silently updating its database with your behaviors, your quirks, and your preferences month after month, year after year.
Wow, okay.
As these probabilistic AI agents become deeply, deeply embedded in our daily workflows, seamlessly recalling details that we ourselves have long forgotten, it raises a really profound question.
I have a feeling this is going to be unsettling.
How long until a proprietary corporate AI platform holds a more accurate, detailed, and persistent memory of who you are than your own human brain does?